Off top, only once in the history of the NFL did a receiver lead the league in yards per game while his team was last in the league in passes attempted. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show, and that one receiver is here. Oh, well. His face is on the screen. Steve Smith, Sr., future Hall of Famer. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you, brother.
What's up, Doc? How you doing?
Chilling. I'm good. Happy to see you in a situation where you don't have a helmet on. I played against you once in the preseason, I think, and you tried to fight me on the first snap, and then we made up and moved on. It was fine.
Retired DBs are always victims, bro.
I'm not a victim.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Always victims.
I'm not a victim. I survived the encounter, and then I tried to fight you on the second snap, and then I think we both realized that's a
dumbass preseason.
Oh, see,
now he's gonna admit after we edit out the other stuff.
Nah. Charlie, what up, man? What you want to talk about?
So, I think we should use this opportunity to talk about the wide receiver class that's entering the NFL with this draft because some people have said it's one of the best classes ever. Pro Football Focus has 10 of their top 40 players as wide receivers. And Steve, I was wondering, when you look at this class, are you as high on this class as everyone else is? And how many number ones do you think could come out of a group like this?
That is a very intellectual question and asked by a co-host who actually listens to his other co-host as a football player. Because every year we have inflated, exuberant people that are excited and talking about their wide receiver that they've watched, that they love, is one a sleeper. He's in a draft. He's not a sleeper. Okay. Not every single one of the top talent guys, the top 10, top 15 wide receivers, as the rankings start to solidify themselves, because there are some players who harm themselves at the combine. Mm-hmm. There are some players who, there were some questions and there were some investigative discoveries. And at the combine, when teams got, I had an opportunity to speak to them, there was a confirmation. And then as confirmation, it was, yeah, his stock dropped. Whether it be hard work, whether it be work ethic, whether it be understanding how to read coverages, understanding what type of player were you in this offense. Is he capable of advancing or playing in different positions based on our team? Does he fit? One of the things that I'm learning, that I heard, is when you're looking at teams look at this player and they say, does he fit us? Right. If he plays for us, this is where he will play. And if that is X, but they have an X make it that's making $15 million, that team will pass on that player because they can't have the same people.
I'm a subscriber of yours on YouTube, and I go there for my to get an insight on the receivers every year. Like, I think you seem to have a good understanding. A lot of former players, I think, especially the great ones, don't actually have a great understanding of what makes a great receiver. So hearing you break down those receivers gives me a better understanding of what I should be looking for. However, am I right in saying that you think that Neighbors is better than Marvin Harrison Jr., or is that a stretch?
They both. First of all, I love both of them. Right. They both do things differently. Uh-huh. Marvin Harrison Jr. is Marvin Harrison Jr. His name alone and his reputation precedes him. He is what he is. He's the first wide receiver taken off the board. But Neighbors is right there pushing, because Neighbors has a little bit more explosiveness. And when we talk about speed, where a team needs speed over savviness, and a team may need savviness over speed, it just depends on what do they deem dynamic.
Well, so this is an interesting thing, because I think we don't know for sure, but if the draft happened tomorrow, it's likely that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to play in Arizona with Kyler Murray. And it's likely that Malik Neighbors is going to go to play with Justin Herbert out in LA. That's kind of interesting, because they're both being put in positions with like competent quarterbacks that you don't normally see from top five picks. What situation do you think is better for those for between the two of them?
It's funny for me to say that, but right now, I think on paper, because that's all we have right now, I would say Arizona. Neighbors is a hell of a player. But Mike Williams is not there.
Yeah.
You don't know what the situation is with Keenan Allen. And they drafted Quentin Johnson, who they already know that was a stretch of a pick for them, and it's not going to return as the 20th pick. They're not going to get their 20th pick production out of Quentin Johnston. And so because of that, now you have a rookie, a dynamic rookie, but now he's going to be looked at as the second wide receiver. But we also know Keenan Allen, he's getting there in age, and we know he's going to be on the pitch count. We know that at times in this game, somebody's going to miss a game or two. And when he misses a game or two and Mike Williams is still recovering and getting back in the swing of things, that's going to leave the only threat, if Keenan Allen isn't available, the only threat will be Malik Nabers.
You've been right about a lot of receivers coming in, and I was wondering, is there a specific trait? So this is obviously for my audience, but this is also me getting an opportunity to talk to you and steal some information for when I'm trying to evaluate receivers.
Oh, it's all good. If you're not copying each other, then that means that what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah, for sure. So is there a specific trait for receivers that most people don't look for, but you look for that helps you evaluate a player's future production?
Man, I watch him from his head and his toes. Mm-hmm. Right before he's running this route, I look at his feet. How is he lined up? How is his stance? Where's his hands? Is he prepared and ready for the hand-to-hand combat at the line of scrimmage? Is he a shoulder guy where he's going through, or is he using his hands where he can utilize his hands at the top of the route, but also in the middle of the route? Does he sink his hips when he's running a comeback, or is he rounding off the quick out or the quick in, those little small details? Because I just did Jermaine Burton, right? Let's use him a full example. Mm-hmm. Bleacher Report has his comp based on his body frame, and you've played against Doug Baldwin.
Yep.
If you watch Doug Baldwin play football, where in the hell is Jermaine Burton's game applicable to Doug Baldwin?
Yeah, it's hard to make that connection.
Like, Doug Baldwin is a savvy route runner. Jermaine Burton is not running routes like Doug Baldwin. And Doug Baldwin doesn't have the vertical speed that Jermaine Burton has. So that comp doesn't make sense to me.
One of the things that was special about you was the mentality that you brought into the game. And obviously it's all work ethic off the field, and everybody I've ever talked to that played with you know you talk about how you are a great teammate and a great person in the community. But on the field, I joked about it at the top, you were kind of an and that's kind of something that you don't find often in receivers. You need it on a team, and it probably helps in the receivers room. I see there's a couple guys in the league right now that have that, but not many. Is that something that you try to ascertain when you're looking at players who got that and who don't? No.
I can't. People ask me all the time, or they try to give a comp to a guy, or they try to, ask me, oh, who's that next Steve Smith that you see that's a dog? And I was at the Shrine Bowl in a reporter asked me, and he caught me off guard, but I was also just being flat out honest. I said, man, ain't no guys out here right now remind me of Steve. I said, because I really don't want that kind of trauma in their life that I experienced that made me kind of, there are times, and you know me well enough, there are times where there were guys I responded or I acted a certain way, not because I was tough. It was because I was really kept my guard up, because that was safer for me. Right. If I had the little friends I have in my life at that time, the safer I would be.
Yeah, this is going into a grown man place where we're talking about mature.
But you see what I'm saying? Yeah. And so, right, I don't think some of these kids should experience some of the trauma and the mental things that I went through. And I don't really wish that on them. Because I got a 9-year-old. I got 4 kids, and I got 26, 22, 18, and 9. Bro, the 9-year-old, how he talks and how he carries himself around the house. My older kids now, when they come over, they're like, wow, where was his dad when we was growing up? Right? And so you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's something, man, I don't wish that on guys. And you don't really want that. Right. Say, oh, that man, he reminds me, man.
Do you think you'd have been the player that you became? Like, your future Hall of Famer, no doubt. You think you'd be the player you became without that mentality?
No, I would not have been the player that I became without that mentality. But here's the thing. As at 44 years old, I sit back and look back, and I also say out loud to myself, is like, wow, man, I don't know how you survived.
So if there are, I guess if there are 10 people who had the exact same upbringing as you, how many of them turn out, how many of their lives turn out the way that yours does?
Depends on which part. Are you talking about when I got suspended for fighting twice?
No, I mean, I think
my expunged criminal record. I mean, which
I think now at 44.
But you see what I'm saying, though? Like, I hear you. But it's when you learn, I go backwards and I say, I have learned through counseling now how the sausage is made. And I don't want to eat it.
Right.
And that's the part that people don't really get. I do not want to eat it. I don't. I don't want any parts of it. I don't want to taste it. I don't. That old Steve, bro, I can't let that guy out of the, I can't let him out of the box. Because he rages first, asks questions later.
I'm proud of you. I appreciate you having this conversation because people are going to hear this and appreciate hearing it. And I'm happy for you. Like we go back to the PA meetings and, and Hawaii and all that stuff. And there were times when your personality was hella useful. We needed that energy at times. And there was times when that energy was not useful. And
correct.
I think that's true for everybody. I think the thing that I find incredibly interesting is you appreciate that the life that you have now is in part a result of the person that you were, but also you recognize that that person isn't a person that you want to be or you would wish anyone else to experience. Is that fair?
Yeah, I just don't. I don't wish that on that experience. And when I say that experience, man, it's just like some of the things that I went through as a kid that I didn't know what it was, and then I realized what it was, And just the negativity, right? We talk about, man, the thing about poor people is the underserved. And when you talk about, and I say poor people, underserved is, man, whether it's malnutrition, lack of resources, education. There's things, bro. I didn't go to I went to the dentist maybe twice in my life. And the second time is when I got drafted. 13 cavities later, because we just didn't have the money.
Lack of opportunity, and it's also lack of supervision and the things that take place. And
my mom and pop is, man, hard workers.
Yeah.
But the dentist, going to the dentist, man, we can't afford that.
Yeah, I wasn't anticipating this conversation going here, but this is much more interesting to me, honestly, than any of that. And I talked to some kids a couple weeks ago, Watkins Awards finalists, and I was talking to them. They're 18 years old, and I was talking to them about how their priorities will change. And what's important to them now at 18 is different from what will be important at 25 and 35.
Should be.
And 44, yeah. If it's not, you're doing something wrong. Like you said, if you aren't stealing from people in this business, you're doing something wrong. But if you still have the same priorities, and if you don't look back on the person you were and able to say, hey, that guy was kind of dumb, then you are doing something wrong. So what are the things now today that you prioritize versus what you did when you were a player?
Practicing patience. Mm-hmm. Really assessing myself. How are we feeling today? Why are we feeling this way? Right? And also just being able to say, hey, guys, to my team or people I'm working with, hey, bro, I'm going to just tell you, I'm having a rough day today, right? So when I say my team is I have a foundation. I got I do commercial real estate, some residential and commercial stuff. And there's times I'm like, I just say, hey, I'm not down for the tomfoolery today. So if you got excuses today on why you didn't get your job done, I'm trying to work with you today, but I'm just telling you that that's not a place I'm okay with today.
Any of your kids have that have a quick to anger response? This is a genuine question for you, and also a question to help me raise my son, frankly, because I have a hard time having those conversations with him, because I got two girls and a boy, and my son, it don't take him much to get hot. And trying to figure out how to have that conversation. I had a long conversation with him last night about understanding the time for it and the time not for it.
Yeah, I'm still working on that myself, so I can't help you on that one.
Well, it seems like you got it under control now.
Well, what I've practiced more now is, man, if you're quiet enough, even a fool sounds wise. Yeah. And so I try to be okay with being okay. And that's, I think in that statement, people will listen to that and go, oh, yeah. But being okay with being okay. You're having a tough day today, or your car broke down. Okay, it sucks, and it's a tough day. But slapping somebody ain't gonna make your car get fixed. Now, if you're running hot all the time, you think that slapping somebody is going to speed up the process. It doesn't, and it took me, it took me a few backhands or front hands to realize that it still doesn't speed up the process. Yeah. The pimp ham is strong, but the results are still delayed.
Yeah, that's fair to understand that there's no connection necessarily to your anger and the result that you want. It might you feel good for a second, but it is put you further
you
away from what you
bad
want.
Yeah, because you got to go back to that person after they fixed it. Mm-hmm. After you just talked down to them. And let me tell you, anger, talking down and being angry and all that stuff, man, that has nothing to do with being a football player. It just has to do with, they snitch on more football players and celebrities than they do regular folk. What? Because there's a jail full of regular folk who have made bad decisions.
Yeah, I think that was the question I was asking you originally about, if there were 10 people like you. I think you're one. The one time that your experience turned into this life is probably pretty rare. But you talked about apologizing when you've done things wrong. When's the last time? Do you remember the last time or the last person that you feel like you had to go back to and apologize?
Oh, yeah. I put myself out there. I had to apologize to my daughter. I was a little spicy, my tone. I had asked her to do something a couple of weeks before, and she responded in a way, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And then the subject came back around a couple of weeks, and I was annoyed. And because I was annoyed, my tone kind of gave off this, where I was, talking at her instead of talking with her. And so I just said, hey, I had to say, hey, my tone wasn't right, and I apologize, and I'm sorry. And she was, and it was actually funny. She said, it was funny at the time. She says, oh, I wasn't even thinking about you, Pop. Sorry, it's good.
I don't know if you experienced this, but I certainly, as a father, I think I've gotten better as a father the longer I had. My oldest is 13, and the thing that I think helped me was they do the same things that I do, and modeling that behavior. Something I didn't realize is when I started hearing the sarcastic that they said back to me was the same sarcastic I said to them. I was like, oh, they're not hearing what I'm saying as much as they're watching what I'm doing. And being able to apologize and show take responsibility, you know, for the part that you play in things that have gone wrong.
The only thing that I would say that is challenging for former athletes, because former athletes, we struggle in this area, which is why business people, every business person wants to be an athlete and every athlete wants to be a business person, businessman or woman, is because in sports, you have a game plan and then you have adjustments at halftime. And there are tangible adjustments and tangible results that you can see. In business, it may take 6 months to make those adjustments and even see any return on those adjustments. Man, you know, by halftime and the middle of third quarter, if the adjustments we made at halftime work or not, because we've either closed the gap, made adjustments, and we are figuring it out in the third and gives us a chance in the fourth quarter, or you get mollywopped and it just didn't work at halftime and nothing is there.
The other thing about being an athlete is you got responsibilities that are clear and you know, and you know who messed up. And that's a hard thing about going outside of that and dealing in the rest of the world is it's like,
man,
I just want you to say I f***ed up.
Yeah. In business, it's well, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
You know, like I've done this on my podcast before, which is if I get a call, if we're in a coffee cup business and we make a coffee cup because I saw your coffee cup. In business, you make the coffee cup, the handle may be warped. It may be chipped. And so it takes five people to get that coffee cup. But in that process, it's warped and messed up and chipped, and the pitcher is upside down. And it may take you to the third person to realize, hey, yo, has no one realized that this coffee cup is unusable, unsellable? It does not look like the other 50 coffee cups we've just done previously. And then they go, well, I gave it to Dominique, and that's how Dominique gave it to me. And then Dominique says, well, hell, that's how Charlie gave it to me. And then Charlie says, man, Steve gave it to me like this. And then I go to blame somebody else, and I go, it did start with me. No one speaks up.
It's pretty clear whose fault it is in sports. And
it's everybody's fault. Yeah. It's the cup is upside down, warped, and chipped. And yet, no one thought to ask to stop the conveyor belt. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, this is wrong. But you don't do that in business. You have a meeting to tell you about the meeting in which no one wants to take ownership on how that happened.
Wow. I'm a little bit dumbfounded because I wasn't expecting us to go this way in the conversation, but I appreciate it. It was awesome. I hope we can do this again at some point, and I will be smart enough not to ask you no dumb football questions and ask you about life, because this is a much more interesting conversation.
I know a little bit about football. Now, I don't know as much as these guys that sit around who don't have the same technology I have, but yet they seem to have better technology than I have. And I'm just an idiot who's a hater. I love how I'm hating, but yet a lot of guys I picked last year, they did exactly what I said they were going to do.
Oh, yeah, no, I keep up. That's why I reached out and was like, can we get Steve Smith Sr. on my podcast? Because he going to tell us who good and who not good. We didn't get that, but we got life lessons, which is so much better. You got any parting draft hot takes that you want to give us that a player that nobody is on or an expectation that you have for the coming season?
The group twos and threes, that group of wide receivers in all will impact the league more because there'll be more of the second and third round and fourth round guys who shock you, where the first round guys, it's only one of them. Mm-hmm. But the second and third rounds, they're going to be a run on receivers that when we look back probably 5-6 years from now, that we'll go, wow. The second round pick, give you an example. The second round pick from my class, 2001, was Chad Johnson. The first round pick was Reggie Wayne, Santana Moss, Rod Gardner, Corn Robinson. So all these first round guys. But the second and third round guys and fourth round receivers, some of those guys outlasted some of the first round picks. Right. Some of them doubled in years played versus their 8-year career. There are some guys that play 16, 12, 13. And so I'm saying all that. There's value in first round picks, but there's more value in the third and fourth round because the expectations are extremely low. I believe that I'm scared Worthy is going to get overdrafted. He gets overdrafted because of the speed, and now he's expected to be a number one wide receiver where he wasn't even a number one wide receiver on his college team. Not because he can't play, it was the way he was used. And if you're going to take that speed and try to all of a sudden make him run routes like Jerry Rice or Odell Beckham or Chad, like some of these guys who are really finesse and craftsmanship in their route running, I don't see Worthy being that today based off him running a 4.21.
I appreciate you, Steve. I hope hopefully we can have you on again sometime.
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Just
a lot,
hit me up.
Yeah, I will hit you up for sure. And if you are not already subscribed to his YouTube, you should, so you can be smart like me about receivers.
Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, we got a special guest. The great Bomani Jones is here to join us. So Charlie and I were having a conversation, and we were like, you know who would really make this conversation take off? Bomani. So we texted him and said, would you join us? So welcome, Bomani. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Do I know what this conversation is?
Yeah, you did. Last week you did.
The one last week. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, man, I've been talking to y'all for like 30 minutes just sitting here shooting.
We're talking about this stuff.
Big topic ain't come up one time.
Because we got to save it. We're not going to waste the big topic for the.
Oh, no, we could now, but I thought I was confused. I was like, what kind of setup is just taking place? I've been set up on TV by my friends. You know what I'm saying?
Not this friend. Yeah. Never by this friend or that friend. And the conversation we were having before the show is for another show. I think we're going to have that show eventually. Sooner than we want to admit that we're going to have it, but we're going to have that show eventually, and I can't wait to have you on to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, the pre-show was a great show, but this is also going to be a great show because, okay, for the audience, me and Dominique were arguing about college basketball, the NBA, and G League Ignite, and I was frustrated because me and Dominique often fall on slightly different sides of this from the consumer perspective compared to someone who worked with the NBAPA, has been a player in a professional sports. And I needed the arbiter of logic, Bomani Jones, to see if my point had any saliency or not. And so we were basically discussing how the G League Ignite has turned into a failure. It's had draft prospects who have gone there highly touted and have not become what they've become. Part of that is coming off of Adam Silver's comments over the All-Star break, which honestly didn't pick up quite as much steam as I thought. He basically questioned if this should go forward. This was a path for people when NIL didn't exist. It was a development path for players to make money. Now there are paths to make money. I think we can get into the future of all of this. But the first question that I have for you all was, do you view what has happened with the G League Ignite as a decision that Adam Silver made that was short-sighted and not an actual logical plan to develop basketball players the right way to become NBA stars?
Here's what I think they saw. I think they saw a hole in the market. They saw a way that they could get the best players to come get on their package, right? And then once they did that, they would be the ones to promote them And rather than trying to develop players to learn how to play college basketball, they would be able to develop players to learn how to play NBA basketball according to NBA style rules, and probably playing against better players, because at the very least, you're going to be playing against adults. Now, what I think has been unequivocally true is that this has been a failure. Like, I don't think there's any way that you can slide and try to be like, oh, well, maybe this, dot, dot, dot. No, no, no. You watch Scoot Henderson play and you realize this has been a failure. You see how long it took for Kuminga to get this together, and you realize that this has been a failure. And to me, the part that the league messed up on in doing that was that learning how to navigate team dynamics is probably more important on the development end than simply learning how to play basketball, right? Like, we have isolated this so much to about athleticism and this development of skill and everything else. But when you take a guy like Michael Beasley, who those of us who remember college Michael Beasley, it was unreal. Yeah. The problem was Michael Beasley was not a grown-up, and we're like, nah, buddy, you got to go to the NBA right now. Like, DeMarcus Cousins is another example of a guy where NBA ready, sure, but probably needed to grow up a little bit, and that probably would have had a better career. But learning how to navigate that stuff is most important. You drop a dude off in G League Ignite, number one, all the dudes on the other team are coming to kill you because they know that everybody's showing up to see this dude, and this is my way to get into the league. But ain't no G League team got 12 dudes that's going to the NBA. So you're going to be stuck around a lot of dudes who, A, are not going to make the NBA, and B, how they going to try to make the NBA? They coming in like this, baby. They over there getting ready to check in the game. Hit me with that one right there. That 10-day contract stretch. I'm coming out here to put up buckets, baby. Right? So, ain't nobody like, I say, what do you think? You think I'm getting to the league setting screens? You get buckets, and then you set screens.
Thank you. I feel all of this. And Dominique, just before you go, okay, a tiny bit of context. The Ignite are 2-26 this year. Gavoni wrote an article before the season about how this was the most talented Ignite team ever, with three guys who are supposed to be top 10 picks. Now, three of them at best are in the top 20, and there are about 200 people going to see these games rather than the pressure situation of playing against their peers if they had gone the traditional college route.
Well, hold on, let me throw this one last thing out there too, though. The other part is they guessing about these players just like we are. Mm-hmm. So some of this might not even be the league's fault, right? Like, some of these guys may just not have it or whatever it is, but the reality is they have yet to create an incubator for 18 to 22-year-olds better than college. They still have it.
Okay, so I let that go on for far longer than I should, because Charlie is a master of changing the conversation. So, all right, we don't have to have a debate about the topic that we were debating about. We can have this conversation about the relevance of G League Ignite. But it's a conversation, because we all agree that it's been a travesty. But the point was, what you originally made was that Adam Silver's decision is what destroyed college basketball as we know it. That's what you were upset about. Point was, and you said I was a union guy, which would make me opposite or put me in opposition to Adam Silver. And I was making the point that Bomani made originally is he saw opportunity and he also saw a need. So creating G League Ignite was something that I thought was a reasonable reaction to what was happening. Not only was it going to potentially better prepare their stars as they come in the league, but it also was addressing an injustice that we've all criticized for years and years and years. So whether it contributed to destroying college basketball as we know it, it's a possibility, but you tried to hang it all on Adam Silver. And that's when you went to get some help from Bomani, and Bomani came back and was like, well, you wrong. And then you was like, but G League Ignite, that's some trash. I agree, it's trash.
No. I was partially right. Let's
get out of here. We don't do partial credit.
Because here's the thing about Adam Silver that I truly believe is that he makes a lot of short-sighted decisions that in the short term benefit players, but what really benefits players is the stability of the league and a developmental program that gets them in the best places to succeed. And I think not thinking about the value of college basketball, not just from a development standpoint, but from a marketing standpoint, is a really important thing. The tournament and people caring about these like little fiefdoms of players makes the NBA draft product much more interesting, makes young players in the NBA more interesting. And also, it's not some of the stars. Yes,
okay,
of
okay,
course.
Okay, no one disagrees with you on any of that. But the problem is you're longing for a time that hasn't existed. G League Ignite and Adam Silver's decisions isn't why this has gone away. Like, Bomani, what do you think?
It is not Adam Silver's fault per se. I would make the argument, as I'm here, play it like, I got my man Sidney Castillo used to write on Gang Theory. He had this routine about like couples therapy and how the whole point is basically everybody's coming in trying to get the therapist on their side, right? Like people, yep. People are not simply laying out an argument and looking for a better tomorrow. They looking for an arbitrator, right? Like that's what I'm here for. I'm the arbitrator. So I'm gonna try to split this baby. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm gonna give you half a baby. I don't know which one of y'all getting the top half, which one of y'all getting the bottom half. One of y'all get the half of the baby that screamed, other one get the half of the baby that. I don't know which one y'all gonna take, but I'm gonna split that baby in half. You feel me? The mistake I think one could make is, yes, there was an opening in the argument and I mean the market, and Adam Silver tried to take it, but he was over here getting this development for free.
Yeah,
you could have just let that happen, but somehow they decided they could do it better. They were like, we can do this better, and I think they just missed the point.
I never seen Charlie smile at per se more in my life, because you said he was wrong. Then you gave him a little hope. He got excited. So my point is, it was dying. Like the reason why it died wasn't because they were already going different places. They were already trying to find different avenues. They had that highlight house happening. People was going to Australia. The balls was going to Eastern Europe. Like this was already falling apart in the development process, or excuse me, the marketing, I think, is the most valuable thing that they lost. But they had already lost that. Like that was the thing that I think that the NBA needed more than anything was an incubator for stars and for people to care about these guys coming into the league. And along this process, also develop how to play basketball in a team way, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the big thing was, we get excited when somebody special that we know is coming into the league and we want them. Like Caitlin Clark is a prime example. If they had the NBA, the NCAA in the NBA would die for a player who's been cooking for 3 years in college and everybody knows and everybody wants. That had already gone away. We didn't have that anymore, because as soon as you cook for a hot second, you gone. You in the NBA stinking. That's what happens. That tends to be what happens, because nobody wants to miss out on that next perfect person. So that's my point. Adam Silver did not create that problem. It was already happening. He tried to address it in a way, but he tried to address it. I just don't blame him. That's all.
I still partially blame him. And I also still think it was short-sighted in the sense that some of these guys, just giving them the option, for the record, $125,000 and $500,000, so was the contract rate for G League Ignite, is something that now, and I know he addressed this, he talked about but a potential academy system or why they could fold the team because they can make more in NIL. I just think that reducing it just to the wages for these people and not about developing them was the thing that was a huge mistake. Because if you're going to start that program and you're taking them away from, like, okay, here's an example of a college basketball player where they're a college basketball program where they're probably making more under the table already. None of us think that tactically John Calipari is an excellent basketball coach, but he does really interesting things in short bursts with these players. He got Karl Towns to play defense to the point that he came into the NBA and people thought he could be a defensive anchor. And you hear scouts and you hear people talking about one of the big problems with what's gone on with the degradation of college basketball, the talent dispersion to G League Ignite and other programs like this, is players don't come in playing defense, passing, doing little things that they learn in team concepts. And you can say that he saw the opportunity, he took it, but it wasn't thinking long-term about how to get American stars playing basketball to win.
Rabbits. All I'm saying is you keep trying to have the argument that no one disagrees with. Like, we all agree with you. That is all true. Nah. G League Ignite is trash. No? Okay.
What Charlie's doing quietly, and this is going to be recurring from him, and I think you're going to see this pop up more in a couple of months from the media, which is, and Charlie, you tell me if I'm wrong, we are wrapping up the 10th year of the Adam Silver era.
Yeah.
We are going to do retrospectives on the Adam Silver era. We are going to grade the Adam Silver era. And as someone who likes Adam Silver a lot, I can tell you, we're not going to be kind in our assessment of these last 10 years. And I think G League Ignite is a plank in what will become a larger argument from Charlie and others that are saying they don't feel good about the Adam Silver era. Show me the lie.
Fair conversation. Then let's have that conversation. Maybe we don't have time to have that conversation now, but I think Adam Silver did make a lot of decisions that got him applause in the short term, but he did not recognize who matters. It don't matter how we feel about him. That's the one thing that everyone gives Roger Goodell a hard time about, but Roger Goodell know who his damn boss is. And he know how he is going to be measured. Roger Goodell has done like the opposite of Adam Silver in getting a lot of boos in the short term. But in the long term, he knew what was right. And he knew what he had to get done to get the people who believed in him to continue to believe in him. Adam Silver has made them, you're going to argue that he has not had a successful tenure. And it's a fair argument to make. I think it's been focusing on the wrong feedback.
NBA like rap had the same stars for the last 10 years.
Yeah, that ain't good. Yeah,
I mean, not all, good. Right? Like, at least the NBA done snuck a Giannis in there, right?
And NFL don't got no stars. That's the way that they play it.
No, but they get him. But then they, like, look, Tom Brady was still there, but they rolled him out. Like, Tom Brady became, like, the Rolling Stones in 1980. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got another place for you. You roll out, but then we get something new big. It's been the same three rappers for the last 10 years.
You bring up some interesting stuff. The Goodell, and so I just want to think of, obviously, the difference between the NFL and the NBA when it comes to college prospects, there are several. Part of the reason you don't let 18-year-olds in the NFL, you know this, someone would die. Literally die. And so they have that built-in protection of college football. But,
and they have the three-year rule, and that no one challenges that three-year rule in part because of that safety reason. But when they did challenge it, it held up. Because the union negotiated it when they challenged it with Claret. So you have a one-year rule for the NBA.
But my larger point is that for a long time, and this year was the first year that was controversial about it, and it was because of the degradation of the bowl system, Goodell also wanted these players to become famous in college.
Right.
And so
I don't know that Goodell was thinking of it that way, but that is happens to be the biggest beneficial byproduct of having that 3-year situation is that you become a star. And to be fair, I think that Adam Silver was not aware of that, and he saw the NCAA as more of a competition than as a part of their like virtuous cycle. I guess it's not fair to say that Goodell wasn't smart enough to think of that, but I don't think that he was like, let's prop up the NCAA in order to help promote. It was just like, yeah, we have this rule and this works for us, because I think it's more of a developmental system than it is about fame and popularity.
I do think if Goodell wanted to stomp it, he could just put NFL games.
I agree. I think he could stomp it. Yeah. But I'm saying the reason why he didn't was because they got development of the players, not because they got promotion of players. But it doesn't matter. They got them both.
Yeah.
The rule is completely unnecessary because ain't nobody really going to be stupid enough to do this. And the leagues, unlike the NBA, where you can't afford to let that potential, like you can't be the person that passes up Amari Stoudemire, right? Like that's a great example of a guy where it's just like, oh, damn, we made a mistake. No, you can pass up anybody in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people would draft and stash quarterbacks and they would not become, if you could skip college, I think that because quarterback matters so much, people would draft and try to develop them on their roster. What do you think?
They would only draft. Here's the problem with the draft and stash premise is that as long as the clock runs on the contract in the way that it does, they're going to want to get those dudes on the field to get that figured out sooner than the draft and stash would allow for, by and large. You know what I mean?
When a freshman quarterback, Trevor Lawrence has a great season, or a freshman quarterback has a great season, you think that they're going to pass on him in the draft?
Yeah, because they're going to have to make a decision about him basically with 1 year on the field, because you could bring him out here immediately and play him and it'll get broken, but that's not going to happen. So the clock starts. You really got a couple years on your draft and stash program, and then you got to figure out if he can play. Like, I think that what will wind up happening is there would be a discounting factor that would slide guys down in the draft, which would then send them back. And I also think most of those guys want to play football and do not want to be stashed, just even with the money being the case.
Fair point.
The bigger point that I wanted to come back to with this is like, Bomani, I think you're mostly right about my feelings about Adam Silver. I think I'm slightly more tepid. I just don't think that the league is in a better place with him than it was 10 years ago. And I don't blame him completely for the degradation of college basketball. There are a million factors that led to it from being something that we all loved, like really up until, I don't know when the end was, 2015. Like that Kentucky team versus the Wisconsin team was one of the last iconic Final Fours. I do think he had the power to save these things. And I do think that one of the things that Adam Silver had that was unique was he was a commissioner that was liked for the most of his tenure. Like, you look around the other major sports of the U.S. and largely the commissioners have this villain role who have to make the bad decisions. And I think that he realized that he had a bunch of owners that were his bosses, but he also had LeBron as his boss in a really interesting way. And his views and the things that he cared about became a huge part of Adam Silver's decision making. And I don't think that has always been positive. I think he's taken short-term wins that in the moment help that exact class of players that he's talking about. But I just don't think that the long-term health of the game has been supported in a way.
Let me tell you whose boss LeBron would not have been and never was.
Yes. Thank you.
David Stern.
Never would have happened. Now, hey, man, somebody got to be in charge in this, right?
I think that they're fundamentally different business models, but they're both professional sports, so we look at them the same way. So the NBA's business model is such that you do need that one star. For whatever reasons, that means that star is going to have a lot of power. How you, manage his power is, you could argue that Adam Silver did that poorly. But the NFL has different challenges, and that's never been one of their challenges. Just the whole idea of football, you are going to get more obedience, probably the wrong word, but more like respectful of authority people, because that is the construct of football. So assuming that you can replicate that in basketball is a mistake. So we can say that Adam Silver was a failure if you want to.
Not what I'm saying. I mean, whatever. It's just more complicated than just being beloved.
We can say, I guess you're arguing that he could have done different things to get them in a different spot.
Yes.
That's probably fair. I don't know what those things are, because when he was faced with all these choices that he got celebrated for, he made the choice that we all wanted him to make, not just LeBron. So it feels odd now. And that's what being a leader is. The sad part is, if he saved college basketball, no one would be like, hey, you know what? Adam Silver saved college basketball. And the sad thing is, and I guess it's a problem with being a leader of a country or being a leader of anything, is the you do that's most important, no one ever knows about. No one celebrates you avoiding the disaster. Like, no one celebrates because you avoided a war. They celebrate because you won a war. No one remembers presidents for avoiding a financial crisis. They celebrate the presidents who pull them out. Go ahead, Bomani.
We celebrate Adam Silver for stopping the great NBA Civil War of 2014.
That's fair.
The potential for the most influential work stoppage of all time. He saved that war. He stopped that war.
I don't know if that was the best for the country, but it was the best for the NBA.
And so, for the record, that's it's exactly why I don't want to call Adam Silver a failure. It's not like his entire tenure has been a failure. And some of the peaks he had during his commissionership have been phenomenal. And some of the valleys have been annoying because it feels like he virtue signals on certain things and just tries to get media love for them. But what he could have done, you talked about how he could have viewed college basketball as a free developmental system and a marketing place. Invest in that. Pressure the NCAA. Invest in that. Pressure the NCAA to pay players.
I don't want to beat this dead horse. Everybody got things to do today. I will say that the only point that I feel like we agree on most things, but the one thing I will say is, it's the one thing I want you to take from it. You can blame Adam Silver for a lot of things.
I'm totally blaming him.
Or you can also blame him for perpetuating.
We'll be gaslit.
You can, whatever word you want to use. Tell me the word to use then. Fault? I don't care.
Yes.
Okay. You can fault Adam Silver for a lot of
amongst
things.
Amongst others.
Okay. But my point is, when you keep trying to pin the college basketball thing on him.
Partially.
It was headed that way. Like, maybe his intervention did not help, but it was already headed that way. Like, we did not have Angel Reese's and Juju's and Paige Beckers and Flauge. Like, we did not have them coming up through the college basketball system before they created G League Ignite. So stop pretending like his decisions destroyed G League Ignite. We already had guys going elsewhere. That's why they propped it up.
First of all, it's become much more common. Now, you look at, the eight guys.
And it would have become more common either way.
But here's the thing is, here's my solution.
Okay.
And this is partially stealing from Jay Billis's solution. And if he had really been a part of pushing the NCAA to be an open market, pay the players instead of being eager to create an alternative and get the players earlier in his own developmental system, that's something that could have created a free market that could have dispersed talent, because teams are going to spend money on certain players coming out of high school, going to colleges, and built continuity where guys learn to play basketball in a team setting, a traditional team setting where the coaches all wouldn't have left, where the program still would have mattered, where it would have been free marketing. And those things are, Yeah, you're right. That's not an easy decision to come up with.
I missed the ACC tournament too.
Yeah, but that's not an easy thing to come up with. But that's like when you think about someone being a visionary of that stuff, that's the stuff that Adam Silver's paid to figure out.
I miss watching Randolph Childress cross Jeff McGinnis to his knees and hit a three also, Charlie.
Woo!
But, Bomani, you got a final word before we get up out of here?
I like Adam Silver a lot. Just throw that back out there again. He's a real good dude. I'm not saying he's done a bad job, but it's going to be interesting to add up these last 10 years.
All right, appreciate you, brother. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, obviously you can find Bomani Jones, Foxworth Fridays. I'm on there. You know you can find him on all the podcast places that you normally do. Rate, review, download, do all those things. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Next up, Roses and Thorns.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Has Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
All right, time for your favorite segment with my favorite person, Roses and Thorns, with my wife, Ashley. What up, bud?
Hey, honey.
So, what's it called? Love is Blind. I see that it's finished. I mean, I haven't been watching, but I've been...
still need to see that reunion, though, next week.
Reunion. But the finale happened. I know all the relationships were determined, right?
We're determined, yes.
All right, what's your biggest takeaway? Well, hold on. Before we get to that, we're going to play a game after this that I think is really fun and really interesting.
Okay,
we'll get
and
to
I don't know what it is, guys, so I'm a bit nervous.
Okay, you'll be fine. It's not dangerous. All right, so what is your Love is Blind takeaway?
So spoiler alert, if like you plan on watching later and you haven't already, like skip, give me like 3 minutes on this. Both the two main interesting couples, there's the one boring couple and they're fine and whatever, they got married. But the two couples that have been more interesting, Jimmy and Chelsea and AD and Clay, in both cases, the guy either before even getting to the altar, so like there was no wedding, or at the altar was like, no, I'm not ready for us to get married yet. Like, and honestly, with one of them, he might've just been like, we can be separated. I can't remember because that happened so quickly. And in the second, the other one, he's like, I'm just not ready. But it was just, in both cases, the women were devastated, despite the fact that probably there were red flags or suggestions that, like red flags is on, like, the one end of the spectrum. Like, it was, like, obvious that y'all shouldn't be getting married, right? In at least the Jimmy and Chelsea case. But, like, the women were, like, devastated. It was like, how could you do this to me? I was fully ready. One had already said, I do, right? Like, they were ready to commit. And so it was just sad. I'm sure this is maybe the sixth season of Love is Blind. I'm sure there's been a case where the man has wanted to commit and the woman has said no. I hope so. But it was sad in this case, two of the three, and the two that didn't work out were the women being so desperate to want it to work out. And particularly in AD's case, and I didn't really have the sympathy for Chelsea and Jimmy, if I'm being honest, because Chelsea was annoying as all get out. It's not just because you like said all get out.
I was so proud of you. No one else appreciates how difficult that was for you to not say the F word.
But you know what? It's actually getting so much easier for me to use my mom's old black lady phrases than I used to.
All get out is not old black lady. It's an old person phrase.
Okay.
I feel like I had a football coach who used to say get out all the time.
Oh, really? He was white?
Yeah.
I've only known black people to say it, but that's fine. I'm getting, but it's kind of scary. It's like good that I'm better at cussing, but I've seen
he was
a
football coach, so he's around football a lot.
Some of y'all, you know what? There have been times, though, where I do this, and then I'm like, oh man, like you should have just said the curse word. You're getting old, lady. But yes, Chelsea was annoying as all get out, back to my point, because I know how to get back to my points or whatever. And I'm probably going like 2.5 minutes, and I told people give me 3. So I didn't sympathize with her. I was like, good for you, or sympathize for her, empathize with her. I was like, yeah, Jimmy, dodge that bullet. But with AD, it was just sad. And I think that it's best. Like, if somebody has concerns and doesn't feel ready for marriage, again, arguably, if you weren't ready for marriage, why are you on Love is Blind? But I think there were other issues for them too. But if somebody doesn't want to, you should not get married. Like, especially after y'all been knowing each other for 2 weeks. But it was sad because she kept being like, not just like, why did he do this, but why do they do this? Like, right. Like, why does this always happen to me? The men, I always do so much for these men. That, like, it was all plural. It was sad.
That part is interesting to me. So, like, I think we can't have this conversation without all the, like, context of, like, societal norms and relationships and beauty standards and all that stuff that exists. But I do also recognize that there's something to be said for the pressure that women feel and result then put into these situations where I didn't watch Love is Blind, so I may be wrong about AD and Clay, but it sounds like AD wanted to get married, not to Clay. She wants to get married. When you said that thing about so many men,
she said, and that's, she loves Clay deeply.
I only obviously I've only ever been with and wanted to be with you, but hypothetically,
if I ever dated someone else who was much older than me, there's no prom pictures of him in our garage or someone else.
It's just like, it ain't me.
I don't know his ex girlfriend.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, just in general.
My Instagram BFF.
Oh no, not that one. That was the other one.
You're talking about her. So I dated a girl
in Denver, and she was much older than me.
Somehow, while he was maybe still dating me or his ex girl, so the timeline's really, really funky. It's weird. Time is a lie. It's a lie.
Don't believe anything you hear. So anyway, I was making the point that hypothetically, one of my friends was dating an older woman.
Maybe I ignore some red flags.
It's never too late to listen to your reflex. So hypothetically, there was an older woman. And hypothetically, a person in a relationship might have felt like I was, or this
he
person
was like 21,
was just
22. You're 22. Really young.
Like, this person was
we
just
were dating when he was 22.
No,
I think he was dating his ex-girlfriend when he was 22. 22. Okay. 22 was a busy year.
This was a whole wasted conversation. But the point is,
older,
like,
women sometimes.
It does, I don't want to say older women generally, but it does feel like, it sounds like that definition or that quote that you picked out seems to me like, it's just a guy, and the guys understand, whatever, they have their own faults, but it's just the husband, and it doesn't matter. And I feel like maybe you could speak to this too, if you have friends or relatives or whatever, where it feels like even women friends that I have are like kind of looking for a guy, but it's not a specific guy, and it's just like, all right, I need to get married, this has to happen. And I guess that just feels sad and weird and like destined for failure.
I feel like it's that, or it's the opposite, where you're looking for something very specific that just does not exist. I don't know. I don't want to say that, and I don't want to make that generalization, but it was just sad that in these two episodes, that is the case. But I do think women are kind of like conditioned differently. Like, from the time we're young, like you know, it's like you, I think I said last time, I regret not focusing more on my career. And I was raised by her, and still am being raised by, she still mothers me daily, aggressively daily. It's like, I'm joking. A woman who had a great career, like, and while raising 4 kids. And so even though I had that example and I went to an all-girls school that was all about like empowering women, yet and still, like, I wish I had focused on my career, because, like, for me, what I pictured myself as when I was little was a mother. Like, I was a mother who I wanted to win an Oscar at one point. Like, I had these wild, crazy dreams. Like, I want to be a teacher / lawyer who ends up not working, right? And so, like, my focus was, like, the family I'm going to have. I thought at the time it was going to be 7 kids, just like on Seventh Heaven. That seemed totally reasonable, and we were going to have this happy life and not want for anything, despite the fact that there were 7 of their mouths to feed. But that's what I cared about. That's what I envisioned. And I think some of that, like, despite the fact that I didn't grow up with, like, a mom who was a stay-at-home mom, or and that I went to these, like, all-girls empowering schools, I mean, and well-educated, that's just how I grew up.
Relationship power dynamics shift at a certain age. And I had this conversation with my cousin a long time ago, how when it's, like, in high school and early 20s, like, the guys are trying to get the girls. And then after, like, I don't know, like, after 27, 28, something like that, it feels like most of the, like, I guess, the desperation that the guys had is shifted away from them, and they are like, especially a guy who has his stuff together, like a guy who's doing fine financially and is comfortable and is like good looking and
responsible. That's how he dated three people when he was 22.
Fit and clean. I didn't date anybody until I met you.
We dated when you were 22, actually.
You're the only person I ever dated when I was 22, or
like maybe you were 23 when we really started dating.
Okay, let's play the game. No, so this
but
game.
I just want to add that I haven't dated since anyone else since I was like 21, right? So like, I mean, we did break up for a couple dates, but for the most part, I haven't dated anyone else since I was 21. And like people say though about dating in DC that it's like hard and that there are no men.
People say that about everywhere though. Okay, have you ever heard anybody say, "Hey, men galore down here"?
Like, well, I just know people say that about DC. So next season is in DC. So I'll be excited to watch Love Is Blind.
Yeah, there are definitely gonna be some people that you know. I guarantee it.
I know there won't because everyone I know is too old.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Even though they'll be like, I'm just so old. Oh, my God. I'm 30. Oh, my God. And I'm like, first of all, if you're younger than 30 on the show and you're desperate enough to find a spouse that you are on here at like 25, something's a little off with you. And there are men on there that young, too, which is really like you just want to be a reality star. Like, and you're not that interesting. So it's not going to work out. But so there's no one. There's no one 39. So I won't know anyone. Anyway, go ahead, babe.
I want to play a game now. So Serafina, the producer of this segment, came up with a great game idea where she's going to bring us scenarios and we have to say scenarios for our children. We have to say which one of us they would go to for this situation. So this was born in our Serafina. I forgot how it came up, but Serafina was surprised that I said I was comfortable talking to the girls about girl things. And that's how it came up. So then she made a list for us. Can you do what?
I was going to tell a story from last night, but maybe it'll be one of the props.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. All right, Serafina, you got it.
All right, so we're going to play a game called Talk to Your Mom or Talk to Your Dad. So I'm going to give you some scenarios, and you both tell me who you think the kids should go to for it.
All right,
first one. I failed a class.
Failed a class.
They should come to me, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would agree with you. Don't come to me with no failure.
So I'd be like, oh my God, yes. What we were at first attempt. What did that girl say about failure? Say first attempt learning, maybe it's fail. I'd be like, it's fine, especially if it was my eldest. I'd be like, yes, good for you. And are you still alive? Do you have a pulse? Like, oh my God, you survived this.
I would be like celebrating. Every other child.
Although I'll be honest, she wrote an essay the other day that I just disagreed with the thesis of. It was arguing about like the presentation of the American dream and a quote that she had to choose from a Langston Hughes poem and from A Raisin in the Sun. And the quotes, it was a quote from Walter Lee before he got the money about like the transaction he was going to make. And then a quote from I too about like, you'll see eventually, like you may put me in the kitchen now, but I'm going to grow stronger and eventually be at the table. And her thesis, which her English teacher approved, so she couldn't change it, was like how both of them show that, even for oppressed people, the American dream is attainable. Like exactly what a seventh grader at like a progressive private school would write, right? And I was like, I don't know. Like what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up? Like I recited that poem. And I was like, what do we think Lorraine Hansberry is really saying here? But she couldn't change it. So I was a little hard on her that night. And she cried.
I feel like academics is generally mostly, if there are going to be more academics questions, the answer is go to mom on academic questions. Yeah. All right, Serafina, what's next?
Can I take the car?
Oh, we don't have drivers yet, but can I take the car? I think they would be wise to go to me.
Yeah, my anxiety would give you a heart.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, go ahead. Take the car.
I've been your Uber all these years. I can still be your Uber.
Don't get in trouble. Be careful. All right, what's next?
I broke that very expensive vase in the dining room.
Definitely me. Definitely me. I don't care about none of that shit.
That's why I wouldn't even buy a very expensive vase because between Lamar and the kids,
they've already destroyed so many things around the house. They're gone. So I guess it's safe to go anywhere.
It needs to be 150 or under to go in my house.
I certainly would not be upset about any of that stuff. I've broken stuff. None of that stuff matters. We got too much stuff as it is, honestly.
I will say both of us are pretty chill about that. Yeah. Like I was having a party and someone was like, don't let them use your nice mugs. And I was like, why do I have a nice mug if I don't want someone to use it? Or my glasses, like literally one broke within 5 minutes of Thanksgiving. I'm like, sweep it up. Who cares? Like, so I think we both be chill.
Next.
Can I have a snake?
See, I think that Ashley.
This is a trick.
This is a good question, Sarah, because Ashley does not like animals, as we all know.
But
and I love animals. I would love to have a dog or more pets, but I would never get them because they're my responsibility because the kids don't take care of them. So the answer would be come to me if you want to talk about a snake, if you want to go see snakes, if you want to pet a snake. But if you would like to make an addition to our family, go to Ashley because she's already made several additions to our family and has never cleaned the litter box, has never changed the water in the fish tank, has never cleaned up his throw up.
We need to change. Like, oh my God. Lamar spit up in my closet one day when no one else was home. And I was on the phone with someone and it was like a call, like a real call. And I just started screaming. Lamar's our cat, named after Lamar Jackson. Don't ask or do ask. You probably heard the story.
Declan named him.
Yes. My son named him. But he spit up in my closet and like literally, so we've been getting work done in the house and it's almost wrapped up. But the project manager happened to stop by for something. I was like, Chris, as a friend, because I've been trying grappling with this throw up for like 30 minutes. I was just throwing wet paper towels across the closet. Anytime I get close, I'd be like, but I was trying so hard because I needed to get into my closet. And so I had to ask the project. I was like, as a friend, I know this is not like your job, but as a friend, would you please help me with this? But yes, to his point,
hold your breath,
I don't
grab
do.
It
no,
go.
I try. I kept trying and I almost was throwing up on top of it. Then it was going to be my
it.
Throw up.
Yeah,
and,
two throw ups to clean
oh
up.
Oh my God. Don't stop, Dominique. He's trying to make it stop, Dominique. Stop. It was a lot of throw up, guys. It was much more than he normally throws up. And so I honestly was like, great. And Dominique was like, it's just because I called him. I was like, what time do you think you'll be done recording and we'll be home? Because I really need to get to my closet. He was like, I'm not coming home for that. I was like, I wasn't asking you to. I just needed a time. But luckily, Chris was there. But so last night, something else the kids would never ask me to do. So I make them earn pets. I don't just buy them for
just
them.
Buy them. You don't make them.
You're
earn
right.
Anything.
And then Declan didn't earn the fish, so I bought
it
for him for his birthday. So Declan got an aquarium.
Oh gosh.
Nobody
cares
and
about
I've never helped
aquarium.
It. So last night his second fish died. Smalls already died a couple weeks ago, and Biggie died last night. They were friends, Biggie and Smalls.
He has four fish and two frogs, and now we're down to two fish and two frogs. Frogs hanging in
no,
there.
No, he has three frogs.
Oh, three frogs.
And none of the frogs have died, just two fish. But so he calls, he's like, it looks like the fish is having a seizure. It's like shaking, and I'm like, I'm not stopping. Like, we can't resuscitate it. Like, so we just kept cleaning the kitchen. And then eventually Dominique goes up and is like, it's done. And it's getting it out. Declan, my laptop was in there. He played Taps for my laptop, the song you play like it, like military. And held his Nerf gun rifle. And Dominique was like, and I was sitting there cracking up. And Dominique was like, F all of y'all. He was just trying to flush the damn fish.
I mean, if
so
you name your fish
why...
Biggie and Smalls, they are going to meet a premature demise.
Oh,
the other two fish hopefully
tough.
Are
especially
not made, named Tupac or Big L. All right, next one.
Okay, last one.
Is this the last one? Cool.
Ah, he's done with me, y'all.
Where do babies come from?
Oh, yeah, ask me for sure.
Yes.
Complete, and this should, Serafina, this should drive home the point that I was making before. I don't think that they necessarily would come to me, but they wouldn't be uncomfortable coming to me. Like, I'm fine with those conversations. Those things don't make me uncomfortable.
They don't make you uncomfortable, but I don't think our 13-year-old, so I'll admit, like, I'll still say things, and like, oh, when you were in my tummy, Dominique's like, they were never in your tummy, do not tell, which is true. Like, we are good about, like, naming body parts, you know?
So it's like
stuff
stomach.
Like that.
It's like, a stomach is an actual thing where food goes.
But a tummy's not an actual thing.
Right, but I mean, why? Yeah,
they were in my tummy. They were in my belly, not in my stomach. I would never say they were in my stomach.
Stomach and tummy are the same thing. So, like, when people say, I'm hungry, put something in my tummy, they're talking about eating food. You're not
putting a baby up in there.
Yeah, I can't live in a world where my children think that babies are in stomachs and are pooped out. That's nonsense.
But here's the thing, though. They, at least Avery, the girls, like, he thinks the girls are so much more comfortable with him than they are. Or at least our eldest, the only one who's, like, had any bit of, like, awkwardness or awkward conversations yet. Like, I love that she is very close to you and comfortable with you. But, like, he, I think, thinks that, like, they would go to him in
they
these
would.
Things. And, like, he's, like, ready for these
I think
conversations.
I think they would go to you first. And then you would act all weird about
no,
it.
No, I
and
wouldn't.
Then they would
I
come
would
to
not.
Me,
I'm so
and
mature.
And I'd be like, hey, it's an applicator. It's a little thing. Ain't no big deal.
What?
Yeah, applicator. It don't seem that hard to teach nobody.
This conversation's gotten really out of hand.
All right.
Thank you, Potville. Go ahead, wrap it up.
Thank you, Serafina, for a great game and a great segment. Thank you, Potville, for this great studio. And appreciate all my wonderful producers, of course. Thanks, Ashley, for being here. Thank you, Megan, Charlie, Brian, Kevin. And I already said thanks to Serafina.
And Bomani.
Oh, yeah. Bomani was on the show. Steve Smith, we're about to record with him. So he's going to be on the show, too, I believe.
Thank you, guys.
I hope. Thanks, everybody. And, thanks, Cortez. Bye.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.